Hey, it's Sprague here. Really appreciate you listening. You're about to get some podcast excellence. It's presented by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
It's time for Dirt and Sprague.
I've never been on live television before, but apparently sometimes I don't watch the news.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Because I'm a kid, and apparently Grandpa just gives me the remote after we watch the Powerball.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
We'll probably sit around and cook some soups and eat bread and desserts and just get all fat and sassy.
The Fan.
Well, there's Dirt describing his week off. Welcome back in to hour number two. Yeah, after this week, I'm going to get the longest break I've ever had in the history of this show. Never taken that much time off. I've taken 1 week, but then I'm coming back, and Christmas Eve, there's no show.
Nope.
So I get back late.
The day after Christmas, we're not,
I'm taking
right?
the day off because I have one more vacation day. Because I get back late Friday, so I'm out next week. And then, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of the next week.
So I looked it up yesterday.
I'm out.
I was kind of curious because I have a trip that was scheduled months ago. I'm going to Sun River right after New Year's.
Uh-huh.
The 21st, I'm off. And then I go, so that would be 7, 14, I would be gone 18 days.
That's a long-ass break.
That is a long-ass break,
Get your ass to work.
It's a lot of days off, but I got vacation days
Come on.
And then I'm diving into 2019 vacation days.
You're using your 2019 days too early, man.
This big poppy cock!
I'll be here. After that trip, I will be here the entire year until next December because next year I plan to fly to Vietnam.
Yeah, you can't use any more days. You got to hold on to those bad boys.
I don't get enough vacation days. We don't roll over in the company.
No.
I can't use sick days. So I will be taking those 3 days off in early January, and then I will be here unless I'm sick every day.
Can't miss a day.
Until December.
You are going to be the definition of no days off.
No days off. That is going to be a grind,
no
my man.
No days off.
3 day weekend in the middle of the summer. Oh, I want to, but
nope.
I can't.
Nope.
No days off.
That's right, Bill. No days
no
off.
No days off.
We got to grind to win titles here. All right. I want to start the second hour with this article on The Athletic. I just put it up at the Facebook page titled What the College Football Playoff Look Like with 8 Teams. And this is by Nicole. That's the wrong one. Nicole Auerbach is the one who wrote it this morning. And her title is, We Don't Need to Wait Another 6 Years. College Football Playoff Leaders Ready to Discuss 8-Team Playoff. And she basically dives in, and she doesn't just talk to people on the committee. She talks to people that have been on the committee or that are tied in their big wigs within college football. And basically, they all tell her in this story, they think they need to address this now. The Big Ten is missing the playoff yet again. The Pac-12 has struggled to get in the playoff. And the Big 12 has had their own problems. It's really just a, here Clemson, and then let's reward the SEC every year. And it's starting to rub people the wrong way. Now, in 2020, every New Year's Six bowl location would have hosted one of the bowl games.
Yes.
Equally. And they think that's the point where they might be able to jump in 2020 and say, you know what? We're going to go to an 8-team playoff and eliminate the 4.
This is, look, I know some people are going to have trepidation about it that want the expansion to happen, and we'll believe it when we see it kind of thing. But you have major athletic directors, you have conference commissioners. Bob Bowlsby's quoted in this story saying he would like to see it. Barry Alvarez, who, as you mentioned, he'd been on the committee, the athletic director at Wisconsin, is in this article saying he would like to see it. And you have a whole bunch of anonymous folks, which drives me nuts because I wish they were willing to put their money where their mouth is. But unfortunately, at the time, they're not. But they have some major power brokers in this story saying, we can't come out and publicly say this right now, but we want to have 8 teams too. And this, it just makes too much sense. You would be at the halfway point of the TV deal with ESPN, because I think it would be 6 years in and it runs until 2026. So you would cut it essentially in half. I think it was initially a 12-year deal for the playoff and for the TV rights for ESPN. As you mentioned, all of the playoff sites will have hosted their play-in, their semifinal game, an equal number of times. And you can very easily make this happen in college football. It is a no-brainer snap of the finger where you either move the season up 1 week, or you just play an extra week if you want. I don't really care how you do it, but you can either play the four semifinal games in the location of big bowl games, or you can have the top four teams host the opener of the college football playoff games, and then the four go on to play those semifinal games that win of the first eight. This makes so much sense, and college football, in my opinion, desperately needs it.
Yeah, Barry Alvarez got upset this year because he looked at the standings and the rankings, and Florida was one of those teams that I think sent some people over.
Ourselves included. All year.
Florida finished number 10. They got a New Year's Six Bowl. They're going to go against Michigan. Two of their wins came against FCS opponents. But, you know, when Washington State plays a weak non-conference, let's all hear about it.
Exactly. And they're a three-loss team on top of it.
A three-loss team. So they're in. So Barry Alvarez used them as an example. The College Football Playoff Executive Director, Bill Hancock, he said on Tuesday that, quote, there have not been any conversations in our meetings with commissioners or presidents about expanding or starting to think about a new format. There will come a time for that at some point as we get toward the end of the 12-year contract, which I think is around 2026.
2026 is when it runs out.
But people are speculating that they're going to push really hard by 2020. Another interesting part of this is giving up conference title games to play the playoff game. So basically,
which I don't think you have to do.
Well, the problem with this is where you run into a problem. You're losing money with eliminating conference title games.
Right.
So I'm not sure these conferences, they may feel slighted. Can they make up $25 million?
No. Well, and then also, how would you have automatic tie-ins without conference title games? You could have a regular season champ. What if you have two teams and one loss that didn't play each other?
That's the problem.
There's like 38 teams in the SEC. They go like 20 years without playing each other. Yeah. Georgia and Alabama could have both been undefeated in SEC play. Then who's your SEC? Who gets the automatic? Right. I mean, both of them will make it in that scenario. But you don't need to get, like, that's the fear mongering that I hate about this topic. You go from, well, what can you play conference championship games or the season's too long? Can you fit it in? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can. Play a week earlier in August. Move everything up. Have the conference championship games be right after Thanksgiving. Problem solved.
Yeah.
Okay, next issue. Well, it ruins the regular season if there's not as much on. That's not true at all. Like, imagine how much more is on the line for teams that are in that conference championship hunt down the stretch. Right now, there was no hope for Washington State to ever make the college football playoff this year.
Right.
There was no hope for Washington to make the college football playoff because they're a three-loss team. But imagine how much more juice is on the line down the stretch, not only before the Apple Cup, in the Apple Cup, and then in the Pac-12 championship game, when you realize winning that gives you an automatic bid. It enhances the regular season.
I'm not going to complain because here's your hypothetical matchups. Alabama hosting Washington.
Yep.
Georgia hosting Oklahoma.
Yes, please. Sign me up.
Notre Dame at large versus Ohio State in South Bend.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Clemson hosting UCF. So there's just eight teams that they use as a hypothetical for this season, what it would look like.
That's what it would be.
Football can be weird. You got some really good games in there with Ohio State, Notre Dame, and Georgia, Oklahoma. Those other two games, I think, would be blowouts. I think Clemson would just destroy UCF, especially with no McKenzie Milton. And then UW, like, I like the Pac-12 getting in. Here's my only, I don't know if I'd say concern. How often are you really watching one of the bottom Power 5 winners go on the road against a team like Alabama and getting that kind of upset?
You can do that for any conference, though. Can Oklahoma go into Tuscaloosa and beat them? Maybe they have a better chance than Washington.
It's a better chance, though, right?
But I wouldn't pick. They would be a two-touchdown underdog in that game. They're already a two-touchdown underdog on a neutral site.
Yeah.
Could Notre Dame go into Alabama and beat them? No.
No.
Could Ohio State? No.
Well, yeah, I think Ohio State might. They beat them before with a third-string quarterback.
But
in the playoff.
This year. If we're playing the hypothetical of this year, you could do that.
Oh, probably not.
Washington could get better in 2 years and have a legitimate team and have a chance to go win that game. So if you're just playing
Bama. See, because after the home games of the first round, then you're playing at the neutral sites, the Orange Bowl.
That's
right.
I'm not going to react just to what the matchups would be this year. Alabama's not going to be a forever juggernaut in college football. Nick Saban at some point will retire. These things come and go, and eventually, yes, Alabama, like New England and Golden State and all these other teams, will fall off. And eventually, I think a dominant team will create itself in the Pac-12, a consistent national title contender.
I guess my only point to this is, again, you know how I felt for a long time, but if you move to eight, I'm going to be excited as a football fan just to see more teams. Right now in the conference, the Pac-12, we are facing a dilemma or frustrations of our conference not being good enough and not getting the credit, if you don't change as a conference and you keep getting in, but you're getting your ass kicked in the very first game,
you got nothing to complain about.
But does that help your conference? Like, oh, the Pac-12, well, they make it automatically, but then they go to Alabama or they go to Clemson and they get raced by 20 points. I'm not using Bama or Washington in this specific example. I'm just saying, if the conference doesn't improve, does that help your conference to go get its ass kicked every time?
Financially, it would, because you'd make the college football playoff and you would get a chunk of that money every single year guaranteed. Yeah. We wouldn't have anything to complain about because you'd be getting your ass kicked on a national stage and you couldn't sit here and claim the disrespect flag. It would be major conference versus major conference. I just want a seat at the table. And right now the conference doesn't have a seat at the table.
But you're playing in the Rose Bowl. You're going to make good money from that.
Sure, yeah.
And you might win that game.
I also, but again, these things are cyclical to me. Oregon has been to a playoff game and won.
Right.
Washington, yes, they had to go play Alabama, but if they would have just had a different, maybe let's say they don't lose to USC that year, and instead of being the 4 seed or the 2 or the 3 seed, maybe they go win that semifinal game. Maybe the matchup's different. If Washington State would have made it this year, maybe they get matched up against Oklahoma instead of Alabama, and hey, you give them a puncher's chance with how many points they can score and how bad Oklahoma's defense is. Like, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that every year you go, you're just going to get your ass kicked on the road.
Yeah.
And maybe sometime you'll have a top 4 team and you get to host one of these games. How cool would that be?
Well, it would be really cool.
Right? Washington's a top 4 team and Alabama has to come to Seattle and play them. Or Oregon's a top 4 team and Notre Dame's got to come to Eugene and play them in a playoff game.
Or Oregon State hosts Clemson.
Right.
In a top 4.
See? How cool would that be? Sign me up. Let's go.
Attack of the Beavers. You're going down, Dabo. You better watch out, Dabo. Beavers are coming for you. Okay, how do you feel about this? The 8-team format, long overdue. Do you think it's actually going to come to fruition? Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic suggests there's a real push to make it happen. We'll continue on this next on The Fan.
This is Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
120, welcome back in on The Fan. We've got a commercial that we aired about an hour ago. I have to get to this later today because it's an advertisement for a TV show, and I don't know if it really entices you to watch or to never watch.
It was like a good joke to have. Oh, yeah? Well, I slept with your wife last night.
And then Dirt, and I'm not kidding about this, has been going nuts about Celebrity Deathmatch returning.
It's blame him. I don't blame him at all.
Thank you, Joe. You were really into that, too?
I watched that way too much as a kid.
I watched a lot, too. I don't want this to be misconstrued.
Right.
I did
pull in Celebrity Deathmatch.
I just don't know if I'm as excited about it as you.
You don't like watching celebrities get their heads chopped off in claymation?
Do you think you're going to get the same enjoyment you did when you watched it when you were younger?
No, probably not, but I'm still excited to see it with modern-day celebrity fights.
I was just telling him, as long as they can stay as close to the original as possible, if they can get maybe even the same voices back for it, I said, sign me up.
Right.
I'm on board.
Let's go.
Okay, so we'll get to those things. We've got Statter Story as well, but we're talking about the college football playoff. Nicole Auerbach suggests that it could be moving to 8. Sooner rather than later. 2020 is the year people are kind of pointing to as the perfect jump-off point to go from 4 to 8. And, you know, when you get to 8, you're going to allow everybody in. And I'm with you in this sense. Washington, for example, you know what? They had a couple hiccups. They weren't perfect. I don't think they're the best team in college football, but they would get a shot, right? They could make that argument on the field and show us they're worthy or they're not.
Sure.
And here was where my concern was. It's not that they're going to get their ass kicked, not Washington, the Pac-12. It's not that they're going to get their ass kicked every year, because I'm with you. There'll be years you're top 4, you host. There'll be years where you pull an upset. But I just think right now, in the immediate, the next 2 to 3, 4 years, it's just tough for this conference. And part of this comes from my feeling of where the conference is as a whole, how they perceive themselves. And I just wonder what it does to Pac-12 fans out there that love this conference, but teams make this playoff because they win the conference and then they travel to some destination and they get destroyed at that other team's stadium. I just worry about that part of it. At some point, they may win a championship, they may host, they may win games and get closer. But in the immediate, I just, if we worry about perception of conference and bowl games, do you worry about getting a playoff team in there and losing by 24 points at Alabama, at Clemson, right, at Ohio State, at fill in the blank?
My response to that is, if you're losing that game by that wide of a margin, you're going to get your ass kicked in the Rose Bowl. So what's the difference?
The playoff,
if you're getting blown
the playoff
out, like,
may right. feel different for people. Yeah, like, oh, it's the playoff right. versus, see, oh, you're in the New Year's Six Bowl that's not the playoff right. this year.
That, to me, it's too short-sighted of a view of how this can play with the conference. I think a good example of this to use right now, we'll just use the program like Washington, the most recent team to make it. They're the conference champ, and they would be in this year. They suffer from a quarterback problem. Jake Browning is not an elite-level college quarterback, and he holds them back offensively. Defensively, I think Washington can hang with any team in the country, and we saw that when they went 2 years ago. What was the final of that Alabama-Washington game? 24-7? 24-0?
24-7.
24-7.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a blowout. No. They couldn't hang because they couldn't score points because they didn't have a difference maker at quarterback.
Well, he had an injury.
He had a shoulder injury, too. So to be fair, he was hurt, and that was a great year for him. They feel like they're solving that issue next year. Now, maybe they don't. Maybe who was the kid from Georgia? Was it Easton that transferred in?
Yeah, he's going to be projected.
He's going to be their starter. They just signed a big-time kid, a Hewards kid. They just signed him. He's going to be coming in.
They have two other recruits, too, sitting behind Easton.
So I think if you just look right now, yeah, probably every Pac-12 team going this year would get their butt kicked by one of the other teams in the college football playoff mix, but ultimately, long term, it will be better to have a team in than to not have a team in. And you will have years like we had with Oregon within the last 5 years of winning a playoff game against an undefeated Florida State team. In Washington, if they get faced up against anybody other than Alabama, maybe they have a puncher's chance. Or if Jake Browning isn't hurt, maybe they score more points in that game.
Right.
I think ultimately this is the best thing that could happen for college football. You have a model right now where you have five Power Five conferences in four spots. That just, it doesn't make any sense. What if you have a year with five undefeated Power Five conference champions? What do you do? Sorry, ACC. Sorry, Pac-12. Sorry, thanks, Oklahoma, for going undefeated. You're
sorry,
not going.
Sorry, guys, we're getting three SEC teams in here because that two-loss team's better than your undefeated team.
You have five Power Five conferences, four spots, plus you have a team in Notre Dame who's allowed to do whatever the hell they want and not play in a conference. The system does not make sense.
Right. We said this, though, the last system. Let me ask you this.
Sure, the next system's always better than the last.
And I do think at eight, you'll have a year or two where people are still bitching and moaning about.
Of course you will.
You know, it's never
going
to go
number eight?
Right.
Should UCF be in?
Because this year, you'd actually have a really good argument of who those extra two teams are outside of UCF, right? You'd have really good cases to be making with these three-loss teams, Washington State.
Right.
Etc.
I would also like to see UCF get a chance, though, in an 8-team format.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying two extras outside of the group of Power Five winner. What system do you think is better now that we've looked at this for? Is this year six of the playoff?
This is year five.
Because 14 was the first year, correct?
Yeah, and that was the year Oregon
got
went. So this, yeah, year five, I believe.
Which system worked better in your opinion, the BCS, which we all hated, or the
four-teamer? This one, no doubt.
Really? Because you get people now that are thinking, like, I remember a Klatt was on a few weeks ago, and he said, because of the committee and how flawed they are in their system of picking the teams, he thinks the BCS was actually better at identifying the two best, even though you only have two versus four versus eight, whatever.
Right.
He thought the system could identify more properly. And so there was some push, not just from Klatt, but from other writers that said, hey, maybe the BCS wasn't as bad as we thought it was.
Well, the BCS wasn't an awful system, but you can't argue that it was better than this format because you've had years where the top two teams didn't win the national championship. Wasn't that the whole point of actually trying to find who the best team in the country is? And there were years you felt like maybe the right team didn't get a chance to go because of ridiculous computer rankings. And when you had in the initial year of the playoff, you had the number four seed who most people felt like shouldn't even have been in it win the title. Most people didn't even want Ohio State to go. They wanted TCU or Baylor to be in the college football playoff. Ohio State went in and they won the whole darn thing. You had it with Alabama last year. Alabama wouldn't have been in the national championship game under a BCS format. It probably would have been Clemson because I think they were undefeated or had one loss at Clemson and Georgia.
I wish somebody would have kept the BCS system up to see what every year they would have done these last five seasons. Like who would have been their two teams?
Right. Because
you said Alabama wouldn't even have been in. I bet you Alabama, even with the loss to Auburn, Would have been really close, though. They probably
in a BCS.
Three, four, or five.
But
like,
you would
right
have
there.
Had Georgia, who had just won the SEC, and then you were going to put them in over a Clemson or an Oklahoma with Baker Mayfield, right? So I'm saying it's an inaccurate system because you clearly didn't find that Alabama was the best team last year.
But, you know, as Clapp mentioned, the math and how it works out, because you have people that have to leave the room for the non for the bias reasons. How different the right. committee dwindles down from what their number is to what it is when those people have to leave the room.
Right. And that's every system of college football has been better than the last, but we're still not to where we need to be. Right. I mean, you used to have a system before the BCS where these teams didn't even go play each other. They played in their conference bowl tie-in, and you would have years where the number one team and the number two team didn't play. Like, just remember that for a second. Like, the last year before the BCS came into existence, you had Michigan and Nebraska ranked number one and number two. They didn't play each other. Nebraska went and won their bowl game. Michigan went and won the Rose Bowl, and you had to have a co-national champions.
Yeah.
Like, that's a ridiculous system.
That's not what we want.
No, the BCS improved on it, right. But then it was like, well, can we really count on computers to find the best teams? What if somebody gets screwed? What if you have multiple undefeated teams? There's too many issues that can arise here, so let's extend it to four. And this has been a better system than the last, but I think you have become too regionally biased. I think the SEC gets inflated in the top 25. There's no doubt there's a best conference, but the rankings inflate their strength of schedule. And you have regions of the country that have been forgotten and left out. The Big Ten's been through it. The Big 12's been through it. And essentially, the Pac-12's been through it the last couple of years.
The Big Ten and the Pac-12 have really gone through it.
Right?
I don't think, what has it been?
Back-to-back years for either of them.
I think I read this morning it's been three for the Big Ten. Am I wrong on that?
No, because Michigan State went 3 years ago and got killed by Alabama.
That was the last one, though.
Yeah, but they didn't have Ohio State get in 2 years ago.
Nope.
Because it was 2 years ago, Ohio State had the loss, but Penn State was the conference champ. So
and
they
last
didn't put
year
one
they weren't in.
In
here. So this is year three. This will be three in a row.
So, you're facing similar situations where you have regions of the country that you don't have a seat at the table, and they deserve to have a seat at the table.
Yeah. So we'll stop at eight.
Like, I hope not. I want to go to 32.
You want to go to 32?
I want 32, man. Why not?
I mean,
why would you not want more football?
I always want more football, but you're going to have to at some point. Now you're diving into the regular season and eliminating
the Take away
games.
All the BS non-conference games that people play.
Like the FCS opponent?
You get one non-conference game. It has to be a Power 5 team. You play your 9-game conference schedule, a conference championship
They're never
going
to go to 9.
And then you play your 32-team playoff.
The
Let's
SEC
go.
Will never agree to go to 9. You have to
Buckle
go to
up.
The SEC's
Let's do it.
Wishes. You have to play 8.
Every program in the country would have a chance to make it in a 32-team playoff.
It would
At
feel
one
like
point
almost
or
every
other.
Team in every conference would be like, hey, we're in it.
You got a chance.
We're in the dance.
See, wouldn't it be cool?
Okay, let's go to the NFL. We got some NFL news or notes next. But first, Joe with a sports update.
Feeling my way through the darkness. Guided by a beating heart.
This is Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
End, but I know where to start.
Well, we got some NFL news to get to, both at the same position. We haven't talked about either of these today, and both pretty big things going on. We'll start with the defending Super Bowl champions, the Philadelphia Eagles.
Remember when they did that? They won the Super Bowl?
I do vaguely remember them winning the Super Bowl.
Remember when they made fun of New England for being too serious and
I do.
Not having a bunch of fun?
I do.
That didn't seem to work out for them 7 months later.
Yeah, that's why you don't want to run your mouth too much when you only got one and the other team's got five. They kind of know what they're doing over there, and I bet New England's having a little bit more fun this year than you are, considering they are, again, going to win their division and go to the playoffs, maybe get a first-round bye. Well, Carson Wentz, they're playing the Rams on Sunday, the Eagles are, and they're essentially saying they're concerned that Wentz will not play this week against the Rams, which would force Nick Foles back into action. And if that does happen and they are to lose, they're essentially eliminated from the playoff conversation because they would fall to what? 6-8.
Yeah.
And that would essentially eliminate them from the playoff conversation. And at that point, they would just shut Carson Wentz down for the rest of the year. So we will see if Nick Foles can again come to the rescue. Can he save their season like he did last year?
Well, you brought up this point during the playoff run. And I didn't disagree, but I don't know if I felt as strongly about it as you did. And that was basically Carson Wentz doesn't feel like he's a Super Bowl champion because he didn't actually win the Super Bowl itself.
He wasn't in that game.
What do you do if Nick Foles does turn your season around?
What if he does it again?
And takes you to the playoffs?
They went out. They finish above 500.
They're
go
better
to the playoffs.
Statistically offensively. Foles catches fire. Like, there is a scenario here. Because that last wild card spot in the NFC is,
yeah,
it's pretty open right now.
The Vikings are, I think, are only ahead because they have a tie.
And people aren't counting out the Packers. Like, there are teams that aren't great that people still think have a chance, and the Eagles might be at one. I don't know what you think in Philly. If Nick Foles does play, you win in LA at the Rams, and you go on this run to get that last wild card spot. It's got to be a strange predicament, right?
It really does. At that point, do you just make a change? Make him your guy if he wins like back-to-back Super Bowls? You got to roll with Nick Foles.
I don't know.
Who's the last quarterback to win back-to-back Super Bowls? It was Tom Brady like 15 years ago.
It was Brady, yeah.
Yeah, to win back-to-back. Before that, what? Elway and then like Montana and Aikman.
It was almost Russell.
Right? Yeah. Oh, too soon.
Yeah.
So this one, it is an interesting thing to keep an eye on because the Eagles could be waving the white flag on the season. If he doesn't play this week, they lose 6-8. Let's say Minnesota wins, for example, and they get to, I think they would be 7-6-1, and they have the head-to-head win, all that right. kind of stuff. So they would just kind of say, you know what, screw it. And you just hope it's nothing long-term. It doesn't sound like it. It's a precautionary thing for now, and he just might not be able to go for 1 week. But at that point, the smart thing to do, I think, would just hold him out the rest of the year. You got nothing to play for at that point. Let Nick Foles earn all that backup quarterback money that he's getting.
Is this the year they have to give Wentz that contract, or is it next year?
I believe next year. This is year three for him. So after year four is usually when you have to face that extension decision.
He had kind of a strange year to me. I think numbers-wise, he was okay when he came back from his injury, but there were other games where, like the Saints game, I can't get that one out of my mind.
Yeah, they just got
45-7 or something.
Right. They lost, what was the final? 48-7. So he has 21 touchdowns and 7 picks on the year. He threw 3 picks in that game. Outside of that, I mean, that's his interest.
That's a
only
good
game.
Year, but that's not a great year. Right. Well, how many yards is he at?
He has just over 3,000 yards.
Okay.
69% completion, 21 touchdowns, 7 picks.
He had like the seventh highest passer rating going into this week, so. And I think the best yards per game as well in his career out of the first 3 seasons.
I don't think he falls into this because I like Carson Wentz a lot. But I did think, and some people might not like this, I thought Nick Wright made a good point. You have to have a line in which you say, is our quarterback above this? If so, then pay him. Right? Like Dak for Dallas. Joe, you're a Cowboy fan. I think Dak is their weakness. I think if you were to evaluate that team, their special teams is good. Their defense is amazing, and the run game is very good and consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Dak, if you're going to lose a playoff game, it's going to be because Dak throws 2 picks or 3 picks and is just absolute trash in the passing game. You're going to have that risk as long as he's a quarterback. But where Dallas is stuck is, how much money are you going to pay him?
Well, and also, if you don't pay him, do you go draft another guy? Do you find a backup free agent?
See, I tag him. And that's why I know Dallas probably won't, because Jerry Jones loves him some Dak. But I think there are teams like Dallas that are stuck in these quarterback conundrums. They don't know what to do contractually, because it brings up the point you just said. Do you just go draft a guy and hope a rookie is okay? Because there's a great chance he's not going to be being a rookie. Do you go get some vet for a much cheaper price and roll the dice and say, we can still win with him as much as we won with Dak?
And if you have a team that's full of talent ready to win now, it's a huge gamble.
But if you're paying these guys more than $22, $23 million a season, you are costing yourself 2 to 3 extra players.
You are.
And if they're not guys that are winning you ball games by themselves, it's a really tough thing to think about. Again, I don't think Wentz is stuck in this, but there are teams like Dallas that look at that quarterback position, and the owner loves him. But I think if it was anybody aside from Jerry Jones, I don't know how committed you are. Not to say you're never going to sign him. He could prove himself worthy in the playoffs. Maybe they go to a Super Bowl this year, and next year he shows you even more on a tag. But until that point, I don't know how comfortable you're feeling paying a Dak Prescott $23 million. Right. And even Wentz, I talked to one of our good friends over there, John Marks. I DM'd him earlier this season just to get a feel. And he says, you know, people here in Philly, they love Wentz and they're not out on him. But there is a prove it factor for Philly fan. Foles did go on that playoff run and he did win the Super Bowl and play almost as well as Tom Brady in that game. Wentz needs to kind of have a season like that for them.
Well, and the tough part too with all quarterbacks, and I think a lot of guys go through this, it when you don't have things working perfectly around you like they did last year, the blame's going to go to you. I mean, their defense is decimated with injuries, especially in the secondary. They can't stop anybody in the passing game. You saw that with how many deep shots did Dak hit to Amari Cooper in that game, the tip in the overtime. Right? I mean, the secondary is just bad. They haven't had a running game all year. I mean, last year you had LeGarrette Blount, you had Jay Ajayi, you had a good two-headed monster back there, even though Darren Sproles was hurt, Clement, who was coming in making plays out of the backfield. Like, you were loaded in the backfield, and you didn't have that luxury this year. They couldn't consistently run the ball. The defense was a weakness, and then I think you start losing games, and the finger immediately goes to, well, what, you know, what's up with Carson Wentz? He's got to go out and do what Nick Foles did last year. I think that's a little unfair to him because he is coming off the injury. And most people still kind of believe that they win that Super Bowl last year if he plays, because Wentz was going to be the MVP of the league. Like, he was dominant last year during the regular season. It just, again, highlights there's not many guys in the league. Even Aaron Rodgers isn't immune to this. If you have things crumble around you, you can't do it on your own. Like, Tom Brady's the only guy that's there year in and year out because of the organization he plays for. I'm not saying he's a system guy, but everything works around him perfectly because the organization knows what they're doing.
See, even on Brady, I don't like when people say he wouldn't be successful anywhere, but there is a chunk of,
sure,
he is in a system.
He just
takes it above a level anybody else would take it.
He's in an easy division that he's dominated for 20 years, and he plays for the class organization in football.
Right.
So he would still be a dominant quarterback anywhere, but it wouldn't be this year in and year out division champ going on runs, because as you see with Green Bay, with Philly this year, the teams have their ebbs and flows. Seattle's gone through it. Now they're kind of on their way back up. Teams go through ebbs and flows, and I think that's what Philly went through this year.
Well, and on the quarterback note, too, now that Wentz is maybe going to sit for the rest of the year, is like Joe Flacco. What does Baltimore do with him now?
Well, let's get into that.
Because how many teams are going to be lining up to say, yeah, Joe Flacco can still be a dominant franchise quarterback?
Should we ask the question next, is Joe Flacco elite?
It's always going to be a fair question with him.
Is he an elite backup? Can we answer that question?
Oh, yeah.
Because there's a changing of the guard with the Ravens. Crunch time. We'll get into that. Crunch time next on The Fan.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that, you know, we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, as low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments. You're both out at the Glorious House of Games this morning.
Let's go!
No days off!
That's right, except for tomorrow. I'm going to take tomorrow off. Thanks, Bill.
I appreciate you, man.
Thank you, Ray. You too, buddy. Hey, we got to get into the Raiders and their situation in Oakland in the final hour. Statter story. Celebrity death matches back, and damn it, I want to talk about that. And we have a gambling story to get to. All of that still to come. We were talking about quarterback news in the NFL, though, and Carson Wentz might be shut down for the year for Philly, which would be an interesting end to their season trying to defend their Super Bowl championship. The other bit of quarterback news that we got today is kind of a changing of the guard in Baltimore, where, you know, Lamar Jackson has been starting now for a month. He started four consecutive games for the Ravens since Joe Flacco got hurt. Well, Joe Flacco is cleared to come back and play, and he's not going to. They're sticking with Lamar Jackson. They are 3-1 in that stretch. The only loss was the overtime loss this past weekend in Kansas City, a game that they darn near won if Mahomes didn't pull a rabbit out of his hat and win that thing late and send it to overtime. And Lamar Jackson has actually played pretty well, and Baltimore has a chance to make the playoffs. And this is could potentially be the end of an era, because they have a contract decision to make on Flacco this offseason of what they want to do long term there. And if Lamar Jackson continues to play well, could be his team.
Well, if Baltimore wins and you continue to stay in this division hunt or get that wild card spot, I don't know how you decide you want to give Joe Flacco any more money. You got Lamar Jackson on a rookie deal, and he's either going to pan out or you'll be able to find out whether he is the guy or not.
Right.
And this is what we were talking about, is teams, it's not a comfortable position to sit there and be unsure of who your quarterback is. But when you can go get better players at all these other positions, like this argument that it's like it's quarterback and nobody else matters, I cannot stand that. Quarterbacks are so vital to your success. But how vital is Khalil Mack to Chicago?
Right. We've seen teams win. Peyton Manning won a Super Bowl when he couldn't throw a football 20 yards.
Aaron Donald has like almost 17 sacks. Yeah. I mean, the Detroit game itself is an example where, sure, Jared Goff playing well this year has probably put them over the top. But if Aaron Donald doesn't show up in Detroit, they might lose that ball game.
Right.
Right. So you have specifics where quarterbacks don't play well and some other position steps up and takes the pressure off. If you're Baltimore, you're moving on, right? Because if Lamar is winning, I don't see the point of keeping Joe Flacco around. He's going to want a bigger contract. And quite frankly, I don't think his numbers really call for him to get that contract.
No.
This Joe Flacco, is he elite? It's a really funny question because it's so... Everybody brings it up. He's not. 2012 was an elite run in the playoffs. That wasn't really an elite season. Do you know what his numbers were in 2012?
20-something touchdowns.
22 touchdowns, 10 picks. Yeah. He had a 59 completion percentage.
Right. He got hot.
He's never had, in a season in an era where people are creeping up at consistently being 70% now, he's never been over 64.
It was a Nick Foles run last year in the NFC title in the Super Bowl. You're like, this isn't Nick Foles.
Right.
But nobody could. He was hot. He had the hot hand.
I mean, last year at 18 touchdowns, 13 picks. The year before that, 20 touchdowns and 15 picks. And the year before that, he had 14 touchdowns and 12 picks.
Right.
Joe Flacco, to me, is not elite. It's pretty easy to see that if you watch Baltimore. But I guarantee there's teams out there that probably won't have the draft capital if a Herbert's to come out or a Haskins is there to move up. And maybe it's a solution via trade. It's, you know... I'm just throwing one out, and I think people would laugh because he's maybe a slightly better version of what they already had. Jacksonville. If Herbert doesn't come out and you can't get past number six, Haskins gets taken by Oakland or something, do you just say, hey, we liked what Blake Bortles did, and Joe Flacco is a slightly better version of him. Let's go Joe Flacco and send a trade to Baltimore.
Right. Depends on what you have to give up and how that whole thing, you know, what you're willing to forego to get the services of Joe Flacco. And you have to ask, is that actually worth it based on what you're getting in return? This is an interesting twist, though, even too, just for Lamar Jackson, because he was and he always will be a hyper-criticized quarterback because of the way in which he plays. And I think there are people out there waiting for the I told you so moment for him like they were for Baker Mayfield. Like the second Baker Mayfield had a struggle and lost a game through a couple of picks, like all rookie quarterbacks in the history of time will do and will always do. There's that crowd waiting to say, I told you to do it, 3 picks. See, can't do it. Wouldn't trust him. That's why I wouldn't take him. Whereas, I mean, you're never going to get an accurate sample size until you're 3 or 4 years into this thing. But just watching if Lamar Jackson is able to hang in the NFL as a passer, you can only it's proven that you can only be a run-dominant quarterback for so long. It just, you're going to get hurt. Defenses will figure it out.
They'll figure you out quick.
You'll lose a step. You're going to get older. It happens to all of us, right? Like at some point, you can't run the offense the way Baltimore has been running their offense. It's too tall of an ass, I think, in the last 3 or 4 games to say, hey, go out and be a prolific passer. He's just not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, I'm excited that he's getting this opportunity in year one because of all the naysayers during the combine saying he should play wide receiver and he's not actually a quarterback. Well, here he is winning games in the NFL as a quarterback, granted predominantly with his legs, but you know who's not getting that and never got that criticism, who just broke a rushing record in the NFL?
Josh Allen?
Josh Allen.
Yeah.
Josh Allen just broke a Michael Vick rushing record in the NFL. Do people realize that?
Does he have more rushing yards than passing yards?
That I need to look up.
Let me get his stats. Hold on.
He, in his last 3 games, he has rushed for 335 yards. Josh Allen has 335 yards, and that broke the 3-game record that Michael Vick held, which was 294 yards in the Super Bowl era.
Okay, so he has got... Give me a second.
But it's the same problem that both of them have. Like, eventually, the legs can work, and Buffalo's won a couple of games with Allen, and it's tough for defenses to stop and figure out the moment. But eventually, you need to show that you can do it more consistently with your arm. Because if you can't, you just can't hang in this league long term.
He's got 490 rushing yards. He's got 1,400 passing yards.
Okay, that was a tall ass to say more.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I did.
He's probably got a handful of games. He might have a game or two where he has more rushing yards and passing yards in the game.
You know, the other part too with Lamar Jackson is sure he's got more to prove in the passing department, and I do think defenses figure these guys out rather quickly, especially when they run as much as they want to run them. But I looked at the Chiefs box score, and I saw a lot of this game. And he had some really good moments throwing the ball. Now, he wasn't extraordinary. He was 13 of 24 for 147, a 6.1 average. That's not that great.
He had two touchdowns.
Did have two touchdowns, and unfortunately, he got hurt at the end there versus Patrick Mahomes throwing it 53 freaking times, 377. Right. It's a much different player. But this is what I think is the Russell Wilson comparisons with all these shorter guys or guys who run, you know, can he be Russell Wilson? Nobody's going to be Russell Wilson, but where I would say maybe can you harness some of what Russell Wilson is 13 to 24 for 147 and two touchdowns is kind of a Russell Wilson-like game, right?
He's got a lot of those.
He'll have a Patrick Mahomes game where he'll go for 377, no doubt, but he'll have other games. He'll actually have a few games in a season where he throws for 147, two touchdowns, no turnovers.
Right.
Can you harness that and improve in the passing department? If Lamar can, then I think he's proving it to you. If he can't, well, like you mentioned, you have 3 or 4 years. You would have figured it out, and you'll know you need to move on.
Well, and I think the formula for him, especially right now, and the reason it has been working, is you don't need to be a prolific passer and put up huge numbers when you have the defense Baltimore has.
Right.
And they almost won that game. I mean, until those final couple of drives, they had held Kansas City, who nobody can stop, to 17 points at Arrowhead. It was 24-17.
That was their lowest output at that point. Right.
It was nuts. So Baltimore has a defense to keep them in every game, and it comes down to can you make a couple of plays with your legs? That was, I mean, the Russell Wilson comparison, I think, early in his career is fair because Russell Wilson wasn't a dynamic passer the second he stepped into this league. He's turned into it, but
a beautiful deep ball, he wasn't killing teams with his arm.
He wasn't going 28 of 35 for 342 yards and 4 touchdowns. He just wasn't asked to do it because he didn't have to. They ran the ball and they played defense, and Baltimore's trying to harness that right now. Run the ball, play defense, use Lamar Jackson's legs, and maybe he'll keep you in some ball games.
Well, I think the other part, too, on the quarterback paying conversation, how many of these guys maybe don't develop to the point where they earn almost $30 million a year and are okay accepting 17 and 18, and the numbers go down? Because we said that, right?
This is who I am.
But when do the numbers go back down? Do they just keep rising?
At some point, they have to.
So if Lamar Jackson gets slightly better but doesn't show it, is he willing to say, yeah, I'll take $17, $18 million a year, and you still are more flexible on the cap to continue to have that dominant defense? Because I just looked it up. That was their second point total, second lowest point total the Chiefs have had all year. The other one was when they beat the Cardinals in that 26-14 game.
And 10 of those points came at the end of the fourth and in overtime.
Right.
So a couple of quarterback changes in the NFL. Carson Wentz might sit out the rest of the season in Philly, and Lamar Jackson officially tapped as the guy in Baltimore. Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgment. Still to come in the final hour, we got a gambling story to get to. Actually, two gambling stories to get to. The Blazers are back in action if you still want to watch them. They play in Memphis tonight. Celebrity death match is coming back, and I want to talk about that. Stat or story, but let's start with the situation in Oakland. Are the Raiders on the move? Sooner rather than later. That is next. Loaded Final Hour. Dirt and Sprague on the Fan.